Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and, the views of our guest this evening. Our guest is Byron Richards, and he's a health specialist, a nutritionist, and we're going to be talking about some of the legislation that's going on in Washington, D.C., that is going to give the government increasing control over the ability of people to get the vitamins and minerals and the other health products they need to maintain their health. Now, who among you out there in the listening audience really thinks that the government can do a better job of regulating your health than you can? Certainly, they're not doing a very good job with a lot of the drugs that they're releasing on the market. And, of course, there's a very real effort on the part of the pharmaceutical industry to limit the ability of the average citizen to get the health products to keep them healthy so that you'll be dependent upon the drugs that are manufactured by the drug companies many times, which are going to do far more harm than good. And those of you who haven't certainly listened to our programs in the past on the statin drug scam or the problems with vaccinations or the problems with so many of the products that have been put on the market in the way of hormonal therapy that have actually stimulated within women increased breast cancer and ovarian cancer and endometrial cancer. It has been known for years what the problems were and covered up by the government. The Vioxx scandal, there's so many other things. Well, with that as a background, Byron, thank you very much for being with us again.
Pleasure to be with you, Dr. Stan. How are you this evening?
I'm doing fine. I want you to tell our listeners what happened to the legislation we were talking about earlier this week and where we stand, what the legislation is, what they can do about it, and, of course, why they should be concerned.
Well, absolutely. We have before the Senate right now the most sweeping FDA reform, most likely as dramatic as the creation of the FDA itself. This is a major food and drug review and update, and every senator, every vested interest, every angle is trying to get their tentacle into this legislation. There are several thousand big pharma lobbyists on Capitol Hill trying to bribe and buy the senator's votes for this angle, that angle, everything that Big Pharma can possibly do to maximize profits and hide safety, all under the guise of safety legislation.
And, you know, the thing is that there is no justification for these lobbyists to be there handing out money in return for votes. Now, we're not bribing people. Oh, we're just really supporting them because we like the way they vote. Call it what you will, it's a bribe, and unfortunately we have some of the finest politicians money can buy, and there should be definite laws against anybody who has any legislation going before the Senate or the House giving money to the legislators. Why don't you call it a bribe? That's what it is.
Well, there's no question it's a bribe, and today we saw that firsthand because a major fight erupted on the floor of the Senate. Senator Byron Dorgan, a Democrat from North Dakota, has put in an amendment onto this bill, which is called S-1082, the Food and Drug Revitalization Act. And this bill, or this amendment of Dorgan's, enables the citizens of the United States to buy drugs from Canada or other industrialized nations, such as those in Europe, who have the same supply chain, the city coming from the same factories, and so on and so forth. And this amendment has been vehemently protested by all of the senators who are owned by Big Pharma, who are also...
Hold on, we'll be right back here. We'll go right ahead. Byron.
Yeah, so the basically, we saw today the true colors of the senators. In other words, this whole bill has been a fake safety bill in the first place. But now today we see that with the Dorgan Amendment, which will make it possible for Americans to get drugs at half the price, and so far this is going to be added. The Senate voted 63-28 today to include this amendment. It still has to jump a few more hurdles on Monday, but if it gets in there, and it very well may, the White House is likely to reject it because, of course, President Bush and his family make a tremendous amount of money from Big Pharma. And, you know, this whole racket where Big Pharma can buy government, buy drug policy, buy safety policy, it's really coming out, and the public is seeing it for what it truly is, Dr. Spagan. It's just a scam, and it's very obvious that Big Pharma wants to do everything it can to maintain its profits, and oftentimes doing so at the expense of human health.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I think that it's so important people understand that really the federal government, according to our Constitution, has no right to regulate our medication. That would be something that would be controlled at the state and local level. So how do they get away with it? They simply ignore the Constitution, which they're sworn to uphold, and in the name of safety, no word from the government. We're here to help you. Don't you know that? I mean, that's why we put MTBE in your gasoline to contaminate the water and the air. I mean, that's why we're doing what we're doing, Sydney, you know, as far as certainly regulating your ability to get vitamins and minerals, because we're afraid you might take too many of them, or you might not take the right ones for your health, or people are too fat. And so we're going to have to do something to protect you from yourself. And well, it's not the function of the government.
And, you know, they have a real devious wording in this legislation that they've put in that gives them the potential ability to attack and regulate dietary supplements using drug risk technology. And for those out there that get a little bit confused about this, the assessment of safety and efficacy of drugs is governed by different laws than the safety of food. Essentially, drugs have to be proven to be safe and useful, and whereas food is considered safe, and the FDA must prove it to be adulterated or at a risk to people before they can do something to remove it from the market. And what the FDA, of course, doesn't like this law, especially when it comes to dietary supplements, which are viewed as food. So they are doing a number of things in addition to this legislation to categorize dietary supplements as drugs and use drug risk technology.
All right, fine. Now, this is Dr. Stan. Byron is simply saying that what they want to do is put that wording into this new legislation that dietary supplements are going to have to prove to be safe rather than, you know, prove to be harmful. Right now, of course, a drug has to be proved to be safe. Dietary situations are covered by entirely different legislation. We've had the Delaney Clause for a long period of time, which gave us the right to use the dietary supplements that we wanted to and to regulate our own health. But now, of course, the government's stepping in saying, oh, no, we're here to protect you. So you pick the story up.
Well, the FDA does want a monopoly on health care. And, of course, FDA management is a revolving door with Big Pharma. There are many good people that work at the FDA, some of the scientists, some of the people trying to make sure things are safe and so on. But where we really have problem, as the Institute of Medicine reported last year, is that FDA management is dysfunctional. And they often are working hand in glove with the very people they're supposed to be regulating.
In fact, aren't they being actually paid by them? Doesn't the Big Pharma provide a lot of the money the FDA uses for its studies?
Well, that is part of this legislation, and that's called PDUFA, or the Prescription Drug User Fee Act. And what it does is it dictates that Big Pharma will pay a certain amount of money every year to speed up new drug approvals. And so last year, for example, Big Pharma paid about $250 million, which was slightly over 50% of the entire FDA budget for new drug approvals. So they're paying to be, you know, basically regulated, and the FDA must have Big Pharma money. So, you know, I really think this is a situation where it's bribing the FDA. It's kind of like if you're a Big Pharma, you're paying the mob, i.e. the FDA, for protection. And so this new legislation is going to increase this cozy relationship between Big Pharma and the FDA by going up to $380 million in 2008, and it's going to just keep going on up from there. So we can't seem to fund the FDA. In some ways, that's kind of good because the management's so dysfunctional anyway. But, I mean, if we had a real safety legislation, which this isn't, then we would be able to, we really need to break this relationship between FDA and Big Pharma.
Well, I certainly agree with you. But now, what will this legislation actually do? What are the thrust of this new legislation?
Well, the thrust of the legislation that is to get it to come up to be voted on is that it's tied to this FDA funding issue, which they have to do something about it. So this only comes up once every 5 years. So they're taking advantage, Kennedy and Enzi have taken advantage to put all kinds of new FDA regulations on top of this. Now, it's a smokescreen bill, meaning that they're pandering to the concept of safety, and they're claiming safety. But as Charles Grassley, the Republican from Iowa, has pointed out, he's introduced 11 amendments, Dr. Stan, 11, to close the Big Pharma loopholes that Kennedy and Enzi put into it. So there is no real teeth in this bill because there's all these loopholes that were written into it. So it's what I call a fake safety bill. It's just phony. But it gets worse, Dr. Stan. They have created within this bill something called the Reagan-Udall Foundation for the FDA, which is a collaboration. It's designed to be a nonprofit, but that's just a word. It's really a for-profit enterprise that the FDA will be entering drug development and licensing of new drugs that it develops with private industry. So our government agency that's supposed to be regulating drug safety is actually going to go into the drug development business, which is absolutely mind-boggling, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. Now, Sydney, they're going to be actually developing these drugs, and then aren't they going to hold some of the patents on the drugs that they develop?
Yes, they will. Well, see, with this new what they call biologics, and the biologic medicines are far more powerful than the current medications on the market. The current medications are basically poisons. They work by poisoning something, so it's, you know, hopefully in a favorable manner. That's essentially how most of them work. They interfere with normal function of the human body. These new biologic medicines are far more powerful. They actually go directly inside of cells and throw gene switches that control how a cell behaves. So these things are infinitely more powerful. And what this new Reagan-Udall Institute does is it enables the FDA. The FDA actually owns and is creating software to test all of these things and design all of the new generation of drugs. So FDA wants all of industry to have to use its design techniques to make drugs. And then FDA has created this, or they want to create this Reagan-Udall Center to hold the proprietary rights, to hold the patents, and to hold the licensing agreements for the drugs that FDA creates in conjunction with academic and industry.
Well, then who's going to market the drugs after our government has actually created the drugs and we paid to develop them?
Well, that's right. And one of the things here about that, Dr. Stan, is they will use the funding of the National Cancer Institute, which is over $5 billion a year, and that funding has been diverted, if you will, from real cancer research into the pockets of big biotech. This was all done by Andrew von Eschenbach, who was formerly the head of the National Cancer Institute, but is now the head of the FDA, and he corrupted the research of the National Cancer Institute for the benefit of his friends. And, of course, his friends are this old boy network called Sea Change, which is headed up by the former President Bush and his wife Barbara, and are connected to all of the big money in big biotech. And so what will happen now is that the grants that the National Cancer Institute gives out to various companies to design cancer drugs, they can take that money, and then they can go into this Reagan-Udall Foundation and develop biotech drugs, and then once they're developed, they'll get the licensing, and they'll sell these things all around the world for exorbitant profit. All of the development costs of the new drugs will be paid for by the United States taxpayers.
And I think really what people have to understand is, Sydney, the big pharmaceutical companies. I'm talking about Merck. I'm talking about Pfizer. I'm talking about Glaxo. I'm talking. Well, you can go right down the list of the names that you know about. Basically, they make more money than any other industry, and because their profits go up more every year. Now, to understand how this really works, there's a wonderful book called, and I know a Byron has written a book, but there's a wonderful book written by Marcia Angel, and she was formerly the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, certainly the most prestigious of all of the medical journals, and she holds a teaching position at Harvard. She wrote a book, The Truth About the Drug Companies. I'm sure you know that book, don't you, Byron?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she just lays it all out. It's a scam. You're paying for it. You are funding the research for the drug companies. They get the research that you've actually paid for, and then they use it for their own profits. I mean, it is the most amazing story. And you've written about this, too, haven't you, Byron?
Well, absolutely. I wrote about it in Fight for Your Health, Exposing the FDA's Betrayal of America.
Why don't you put in a pitch for your book? How can people get your book? Because
Certainly get it, in any bookstore now. They can get it on Amazon.com and, of course, at my website, which is wellnessresources.com, where I'm also putting regular updates on what's happening with this Senate Bill S-1082, which is being negotiated in the Senate right now. This is breaking news, Dr. Stan. I mean, this is going on right today. They're expecting to have a final vote on this on Monday. They wanted to have a final vote on it this week, but we have had hundreds of thousands of people across this country have been flooding the Senate with objections to this bill, and it's really thrown them for a loop. They were not expecting the public to be able to see the kind of scam that is being perpetrated. People are sick and fed up with having to pay twice as much for their drugs as they do in any other place in the world. They're sick and fed up with Big Pharma working with the FDA to hide the known risks of drugs and not tell people accurate risk profiles for many, many, many common drugs, whether it's blood pressure medications or bone drugs or cholesterol medications. The consumer public out there right now does not have an accurate understanding of the risks of those drugs or almost any drug on the market. And so, you know, the public is just sick and tired and fed up with it. And they're seeing through the spin that the Big Pharma bill, I mean, this really is a Big Pharma bill, S-1082. Big Pharma designed it with the FDA and Senators Kennedy and Enzi. They've been working together for 2 years to put this bill together so that they could deflect the criticism of drug safety. But as I said, Charles Grassley has seen right through it. He's got 11 amendments that are going to come up on Monday, and all of us have to support those. Actually, we want to defeat the whole legislation because it's too deceptive and it's too dishonest and it's not speaking to the true issues, the true drug safety issues, and it creates a potential for harassment and targeting of dietary supplements for no real reason, which is scary.
No, let me point out the fact that they say, well, look, we should, as a pharmacy, Big Pharma, should be able to charge whatever need to. After all, we need that money to finance our research. What they don't tell you is they're not financing the research. The government is financing the research. All they do is, once the research is already done, they finance some of the drug trials, but this is a very, very small part of the expense. In fact, they spend far more money on television ads, and detail people and advertising their drugs than they do on the drug trials. But the research is being done by the government, and they're simply lying. Now, I want you to go, I hope many of you will want to go to Byron's website, because you tell them how to word the to word the emails and the faxes. How can they get to your website?
It's wellnessresources.com.
And if you really care, you can join the hundreds of thousands of other people that are all across America are emailing and faxing and calling their senators and saying, stop this foolishness, Are you working for the public? Are you working for a Big Pharma? How much are you getting, Senator? We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest. Well, Byron, you know, I think this is a beautiful example of what the people can do if they're really involved. So you pick up this story from there.
Well, I think it's quite true, Dr. Stan. We have seen in the last 4 or 5 days a massive public outpouring of support. In fact, I am in possession of an email that contains a transcribed dialogue between Senators Hatch, Harkin, Kennedy, and Enzi. I'm going to be posting this up on my website. It'll be up tomorrow morning. But what this shows is that they are being flooded and inundated with phone calls from all over the country of people who are concerned that this legislation could potentially affect their access to dietary supplements. And when these people are calling in, they're telling them that they're confused, they don't understand that this is drug safety legislation. But as I've been telling everyone, don't buy this for a second. Big Pharma and the FDA tried to sneak language into this bill that their lawyers are using as a strategy to brand dietary supplements as drugs. I mean, these people, you'd think our government was working for the people. You'd think that they'd want people to be healthy. You'd think they'd want people to know how they can prevent disease with nutrition, even how they can help treat their diseases with nutrition so that they could actually get better, actually get well, maybe not need drugs and that kind of thing. But no, our government, the FDA in particular, is dead set on everyone out there not knowing what they can do to stay healthy, not knowing what they can do to treat disease or prevent disease with dietary supplements. They want to make it illegal for me to tell you how a nutrient works in a disease context. They obviously do. There's a ton of science that's credible that shows this. But the FDA has a gag order on the First Amendment, and they're doing this because they are nothing more than a police bully force operating in the best interests of the profits of Big Pharma.
And you hate to sound like a radical when you're saying this, but the big pharmaceutical companies have been ripping off the public. Look at their profits. And then, of course, understand that they're not paying for the research on most of these drugs. They're paying for the clinical trials. Isn't that accurate? Isn't that pretty well how it's
Well, they do. They do get a lot of money from various government institutes of health and so on that do have a lot of federal funding to help with research. Big Pharma does put money into some of the research, so it's not all just government funding. A lot of it is. A lot of it is. You're absolutely correct. But Big Pharma is rewarded for that with a patent on that lasts a number of years that gives them some protection before the generics start up. And so they make money, and they recoup their investment what it is, and there is, and you're absolutely right, a huge public investment. Now, where we, the citizens who need to use these medications and rely on them, they're being ripped off by Big Pharma, and this has got to come to an end. I mean, there's no reason that people in the United States of America who are actually the driving force behind paying for all of these blockbuster drugs, there's no reason on earth that we have to pay twice the price or more for the very same medications as anyone else in the world. It is just unbelievable. And on top of that, Big Pharma has all these cherry deals with tax breaks. So they don't have to pay. I heard this morning in the Senate testimony that they end up having to pay like 5% tax on their profits from their exported sales of pharmaceuticals. I mean, it's something like $100 billion they save by a tax break.
Hold up, Howard. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Byron Richards. I believe in the free enterprise system. I believe in competition. I believe people should be able to make profit from their work. But when you've got a sweetheart deal with government, I mean, when, of course, the government is helping in many instances to develop the drugs, and then, of course, you've got a situation where the people from the FDA come to work for the pharmaceutical companies after they retire from government, and vice versa, they go from the pharmaceutical companies into government. When the profits from the pharmaceutical companies are larger proportionally than any other, field I know, and they keep going up every year. I mean, you're talking phenomenal amounts, not 5%, 10%, but phenomenal profits are being made, and the stock prices keep going up and up, and it is because of their collusion with government. If it were a free enterprise system, I'm all in favor of it. But not using government to prevent competition, and certainly not using government and the power of government to try to keep the people from using alternative means of maintaining their health. That is the frightening thing about what's going on. Well, anyway, do you think there's a good chance that we could block this, Byron?
Well, there is a good chance we can block it, not on health freedom principles, but on the drug reimportation aspect. The amendment called the Dorgan Amendment, as the White House has threatened to veto the entire bill if that amendment is included, and that amendment, as it looks as of today, will be included. So that's good news from the point of view of the bill likely to be vetoed by President Bush. Whether or not the Senate can override the veto, they're right on the edge of having enough votes, so that may happen as well.
Now, but, could you explain to what this amendment is? Because I could not imagine President Bush vetoing the bill because it was good for the people.
Well, he doesn't want... this is really embarrassing, President Bush, because the only reason he can veto this is by saying, well, it just wouldn't be safe to bring drugs in from other countries. Yet in Europe, they've been doing it for 20 years, bringing in drugs from other countries, between countries and whatnot. Canada has the same supply line that the United States pharmacies have. So a licensed pharmacy in Canada often has the same exact drug supply line and channel that a United States pharmacy has. So there's really very, very little risk in this. The risks for counterfeiting of medications are certainly out there, but they already exist within the United States. So it's one of these things where the safety problem with bringing in drugs from other industrialized nations who have already established regulatory systems, it's really a non-issue because it's the very same drugs coming from the very same factories.
Well, one of the things that really bothers me is here in this last 2 weeks, we've heard a lot of talk about the poisoned pet food, the gluteins, and the pet food that's coming from China. This food should be inspected before it's allowed to come in here and be put into over 100 brands of pet food. Ah, shucks, though, they're just not doing that. Where they don't have we just don't have the regulations of the people. What we need is more government regulations to protect the people from possible contamination from food coming from other countries. Isn't it interesting, and I'm sure it's just a coincidence, that just before this major legislation goes before the Senate, we should have this major scandal where apparently thousands, we don't know, maybe tens of thousands of pets have had been damaged by this food product, and kidneys have been damaged, and many of them are ill, many of them are going to die of it. I'm sure it's just a coincidence that happened.
Yes, it's kind of hard to believe, isn't it? It's certainly being used to the advantage of the politicians who are trying to create fear in the public that bringing in medications. And, of course, we're not talking about medications from India or China where there's no control over them in this case. We're talking about the very same medications made by the very same pharmaceutical companies going through the very same supply lines oftentimes, but certainly similar in Europe and Canada. And there's no reason that the United States citizens shouldn't be able to access those drugs. Of course, as soon as there's a law that they can, then, of course, the prices will immediately come down in this country and they won't even have to.
Well, unfortunately, why, of course, there are those who would deprive Americans of the right to get exactly the same drug in Canada that they get in America at half the price. Oh, we can't do that because it stifles competition.
That's right. The Office of Budget and Management said today that it would save American taxpayers $50 billion over the next 10 years.
Yeah, but what that really means is Big Pharma's going to lose $50 billion.
Exactly.
And that, of course, is what drives its prices up. That's how, of course, the CEOs get, 30 or $40 million dollars when they retire. That's it. The golden parachute, they call it. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, our guest this evening, Byron Richards, is on the front lines of this battle and doing an excellent job. He's been on our other programs telling the same story, and I'm hoping that many of our listeners have accepted their responsibility as citizens of this country to exercise their right to contact their duly elected representatives and let them know how they feel about it. Now, my understanding is, Byron, if people go to your website, you actually have suggested wording that can be utilized so that they will really understand what all the issues are, because this gets pretty complicated, doesn't it, for the average individual
who's
just hearing about it.
The bottom line is that you want a fair price for drugs if you need drugs, and so we're supporting something called the Dorgan Amendment, which enables it basically socks Big Pharma in the belt and coughs over $50 billion back to United States citizens so we can use it to enhance the quality of our lives instead of the quality of Big Pharma's bottom line.
Well, now, but Chris, what about this, their ability then to begin to regulate the health products?
Right. And I have a special amendment. We call it the People's Amendment. It was written by the leading health freedom attorney in this country, Jonathan Emord. And that amendment would neutralize the threat to dietary supplements. And that's posted on our website at wellnessresources.com. And so we need to call Senator Hatch, Senator Harkin, Senator Kennedy, Senator Enzi, your own senators, and let them know that you will not tolerate a threat to dietary supplements as a backdoor scam in this legislation, because it's just too important. As there's 150 million Americans out there who rely on dietary supplements for their health and their well-being as part of what they do to be healthy. And anytime we see one of these major threats, the FDA is trying to run a power play, and they want to be able to brand dietary supplements using drug risk technology so that they can quickly remove them from the market with little or no evidence of any kind of problem. We see this as a harassment tool that FDA wants to use in order to basically eliminate the competition for medication. And the relationship between the FDA and Big Pharma is a very close relationship, and they have a history, really, for the last 100 years, of stamping out any competition to the pharmaceutical model. And so this new bill, S-1082, has language buried in it, which I've exhumed out of it and show you exactly what that language is. That is the threat to dietary supplements.
Hold that thought there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Byron Richards, and he has been doing a good job, along with other people, to get the truth out about what's going on. Now, Byron, let's go ahead and get your webpage out. Tell our listeners about your book, and then, of course, about the work that you do.
Well, the website is, of course, wellnessresources.com. You can also give our office a call at 800-717-9355. I'm the author of several books, one of them which is specifically on this topic and gives the whole history of how the FDA got so intertwined with Big Pharma and the military, for that matter. And that's called Fight for Your Health, Exposing the FDA's Betrayal of America. That's also on the website. And you can see I write a lot about diet and health and obesity. I'm the leading nutritionist in the country, really, on the subject of the hormone leptin, which is the hormone that controls metabolism. And so you can see that also on our website. And, I've also designed and developed about 75 different nutritional products over the years that are of a pharmaceutical grade nutrient. Truly high quality, and people can look through those. We have a tremendous amount of helpful information on our website, so it's a good place to go and get acquainted with. It's wellnessresources.com.
Well, now, Chris, apparently there's been a lot of confusion out there, on the Internet about this legislation and certainly about some other things, some sort of something that was coming up, and it was basically sort of an advisory position for the FDA. Would you like to clarify this?
Well, there was a guidance document, and that was another call to action that went out on the Internet a CAM, or Complementary and Alternative Medicine guidance document that the FDA had issued some opinions about how they were likely to interpret existing laws. I really don't think there was anything consumers could do about that. It was just the FDA talking to other regulatory agencies about how they planned on viewing certain laws. It really didn't pose any threat that was noteworthy. It was kind of like saber rattling by the FDA. It did draw a lot of public response, and so in that regard, it's fine for the FDA to know that people are watching them. But it really had very little meaning in terms of anything that was likely to be threatened. It really didn't threaten dietary supplements in any way, shape, or form.
And so this is really the major issue, isn't
well,
it?
Well, yes. I mean, right before us, right now, we are talking about the creation of new laws that will usher in the next generation of drugs and be the drug safety laws we are more or less stuck with probably for the next several decades. And Big Pharma, of course, has their tentacles, their hundreds of millions of lobbying dollars that they are paying, of course, to be in a favorable condition so that they can keep raking in profits, oftentimes exorbitant profits, as well as cover their health risk factors and also stamp out competition. This is always their goal, stamp out competition.
And so basically this has nothing to do with free enterprise. It has to do with using government to stop competition. That's how, of course, great profits are made. Use
well,
government.
Yes, the best competition is no competition.
Right. And so let's just, right now, if you have a question or comment, my telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And certainly, Byron's on the front lines of this battle. And this is a very important battle. The other side certainly wants to be able to control your access to health products and label them in this and treat them in the same category as drugs. If they can do that, then they can cut back, say, on the amount of vitamin C and the amount of vitamin D that's in the pills. Now, where does the Codex Alimentarius fit into this?
Well, Codex Alimentarius is a basically it's the United Nations food-related group that has been around for a while now, and they are developing international guidelines. Nobody took them very seriously until the World Trade Organization started getting power. And so now when Codex is going to issue their guidelines about various things upon threat of trade sanctions, they may be able to circumvent the laws in any one country. And we are very, very concerned about Codex and dietary supplements. Because what they're trying to do is set what they call a safe upper limit for dietary supplement intake of any particular nutrient. Above that limit, they're going to try to define it as requiring drug approval or needing to be sold with prescription. Very draconian legislation has already been adopted by the European Union utilizing this same concept, which is running parallel to the Codex issue. And they're set for the end of 2009 full implementation of this. In our country, the FDA is working secretively with Canada and Mexico with something called the Trilateral Cooperation Charter, which is the health point or the health front-end point on the North American Union. So we have the FDA with no congressional mandate or law creating policy and trying to bind the citizens of our country with Canada and Mexico on health issues, which, of course, would be very detrimental to our citizens and also then sets the stage for the international implementation of Codex. And it's important to understand that this, again, it's all going back to the FDA is intimately involved with Codex trying to get guidelines to come into this country that will brand and regulate vitamins as drugs. And I got to make a point here, Stan. They're not trying to target all the cheap garbage vitamins out there that are made by the pharmaceutical companies. They are trying to target therapeutic nutrition. In other words, nutrition that will actually do something to help a person stay healthy, stay well. And so they don't want that because there's no business for the pharmaceutical companies that people are well and healthy and happy. They don't make any money. They have to find new markets. They have to create sick people. They have to manage sick people. When they don't have enough, then they go after people that aren't sick and start giving them labels like ADD and ADHD so they can give them drugs. And, you know, they target our children. They target our elderly. They target the baby boomers. And they don't do it with sound science. They do it with the priority of drug sales in mind.
Yeah, because they really want to, limit the amount of vitamin C in a capsule. Well, the amount of vitamin D in a capsule and 200 international units of vitamin D is, well, of course, if you took your shirt off out and you were in Denver, Colorado for about a half an hour, well, you'd get 10,000 units of vitamin D. Heavens, that's too much. I mean, after all, 200 units is about all that you need. Well, that might keep you from getting rickets, but vitamin D is the sunshine vitamin. It's had all sorts of very, very beneficial effects, and certainly it's been known for many years. Helps to fight infection, helps to regulate your calcium metabolism. It seems to be, and there's some recent studies that suggest that it really does help the individual immune system dealing with cancer. And they really don't want you to have access to this or so many of the other things that are very real, that really can keep you from your health and your immune system functioning correctly. And people say, well, why would that be? Well, Byron says that they certainly don't want healthy people. And as incredible as it may seem, that is the major function of policies of our government. If you've never read National Security Study Memorandum 200, official government publication 1974, we do have it available. You can pull it down on the internet. Population control is the major thrust of our government. There are too many people in our country, too many people in the world. So why in the world would they want to have healthy people? And people say, that's crazy talk. How do you feel about that? Am I getting too far off the track there, Byron?
No, you're right on the track, actually, Dr. Stan. The underlying and secret policy of the bureaucrats, and especially the elite bureaucrats, is one of eugenics. It's been the goal of the Rockefellers since the turn of the century. Actually, the United States was one of the biggest proponents of eugenics, and then we had all kinds of people being sterilized here up until even the 1970s. And we had a Supreme Court ruling in 1927 that favored sterilization, and then, of course, Hitler took it over in the 40s and really popularized it over there in Germany, and it eventually fell out of disfavor. But it's never fallen out of disfavor as a movement with government bureaucrats who look around the globe and say, well, there's only so many resources to go around, so, hey, let's selectively starve populations. And so on, and it sounds diabolical. It sounds like a conspiracy theory, but the memorandum you were just referring to is a pretty darn clear-cut documentation. I mean, that's a government document that finally became available through Freedom of Information Act request, and it's very clear that those consider it national security to implement eugenics movements. And so because they claim the national security card, they don't want to tell anybody about it, yet that's what a lot of our policies are centered on.
And let me just point out a beautiful policy. When the AIDS epidemic first came along, we have our hemophiliac. Now, hemophiliac is a terrible genetic disease, and of course, contaminating the gene pool, and the unfortunate people who have this tendency to bleed. And wouldn't it be far better off if we could just simply remove them from the genetic pool? This is what the geneticists say. And so when the AIDS epidemic came along and they knew that the factor VIII that they were giving to the hemophiliacs was contaminated and would kill them, they gave it anyway. They gave it here in the United States. They gave it in Canada. They gave it in France and in Japan. At least in France and Japan, they actually tried the doctors who advocated this when they knew it was infected. Here and I believe in France, one of them even was convicted of murder and sent to prison. Here in the United States, nobody was ever punished. I'll give the people a little money settlement for killing their children, for killing the people. But if you understand that this is eugenics, How do you clean the dense gene pool? What a wonderful opportunity to kill off a lot of the hemophiliacs. It's organized eugenics. There really are people who look at the world differently than you.
Another angle on what you're saying, of course, is that hemophiliacs are usually they're higher in a population of the interbreeding of the elite. And so if you've got the wrong roll of the genetic dice during this elite family interbreeding process, you're more likely to be a hemophiliac as soon as you are or diagnosed as one. Then all of a sudden you're the black sheep of the elite family, and they do everything to cast out those members of their own families. I mean, I've read just horror stories of hemophiliacs in these elite families, and they're just shunned, and it's just a terrible thing.
And of course, this was a wonderful way to get rid of them, but nobody would ever call it murder. You see, even though it was, though we never call it murder, and yet they knew exactly what they were doing. Well, let's go to Laverne calling from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Laverne. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Byron, is this why the liberals are working to get a national health plan so they can, that will pay for all this medication and stuff?
Yeah, politics is kind of confusing on this subject because both the Democrats and the Republicans are both trying to control health care for somewhat different reasons. You have the Democrats who want to socialize medicine to go into effect, and so that's why they're always pushing more and more public health models and forcing drugs and immunizations on everyone. And then you have the Republicans who are pushing the same drugs and immunizations, but strictly for as a profit model for big pharma.
Oh.
So it's very confusing because neither the Republican nor the Democratic Party stands up for the rights of the people. Both of them have agendas to control people for somewhat different reasons, but the net result is essentially the same, because if you can control the health, the bodies, and the minds of the population, you have what's called herd mentality, crowd control. And so one of the first things that has to be eroded in any truly free people is their health freedom, and that's what we're seeing here with this proposed S-1082 legislation.
Anything else, Laverne?
Oh, 102 was mentioned as well as S-108. What is 102?
It's S-1082. That's the number of the bill.
Oh, S-1082. Oh, that's where I wrote it down wrong. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for calling, Laverne. And let's go to Mike, who's calling here from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I want to ask about the FDA and the pet food. One of the outcomes of this whole big fiasco with the pet foods is that the FDA stepped into the regulation of pet food, which is was something new, I understand, that it's an area they never ventured into before. And so now you have to imagine, or I do, a scenario like a population starvation where people really start to eat everything in sight. You know, if you've read accounts of Leningrad the siege of the Nazi occupation of the Netherlands, like Corrie ten Boom wrote that when she returned to Belgium, there were no animals left anywhere. So people would start eating pet food, and I think that if they want to starve us, they want to keep pet food away from us also.
I'm very concerned about the food supply, but I certainly don't necessarily want to trust the FDA. I mean, they're the people, of course, you know, who've gone right, along with so many of the things that are really harmful for the people. Dental amalgam, they know the mercury in them is poison. They know, of course, that the mercury in the vaccines was poison. And they're lying about the relationship between that and autism, because they have the studies. The CDC has the studies. The EPA has the studies. And, of course, they're doing everything they can to keep the American people from learning why 1 in 150 children now has autism in America. If we can't trust them to be truthful about autism and mercury poisoning of our children, can we really trust them with our general health? Anything else, Mike, before?
Well, I was curious what your guest might know about the FDA and their involvement in the pet food.
Well, as far as pet food goes, FDA has always had the ability to regulate pet food. That's nothing new. They just don't have the resources really to do a very good job. FDA regulates just over 1% of the food coming into this country from foreign countries. And when they do that, anywhere from 5 to 6% of the food they test is contaminated, which means of the 99% of the food they're not inspecting, at least 5% of it is contaminated with salmonella and other parasites and other infections. In other words, the food is adulterated. And FDA, instead of doing its job and our government providing the resources for FDA inspectors to, you know, have something to do with the quality of the food supply and what's coming into this country, you know, they're all caught up with their plans that, you know, propping up the profits of Big Pharma. And it's, there's just not enough resources. There's not enough focus here on the FDA, by the FDA, on things that are actually really important.
Thanks very much, Mike.
Okay.
Since I think we've seen recently the situation with the spinach. You know, man, night after night after night after night after night, we heard about the problem as far as the spinach. Go right ahead, Byron. We got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I think it's really important for the listeners to understand that right now there is sweeping reform being debated in the Senate. It's a bill called S-1082, and this bill is going to renew user fees where Big Pharma pays the drug companies, or Big Pharma rather pays the FDA for approval of new drugs, which is a bribe being paid to the FDA. This is how Congress, is all the better the Senate can do in terms of how to figure out. We give $100 billion over to the Iraq war a year, but we can't give $500 million to the FDA to safely approve new drugs. They have to be bribed by Big Pharma. So we've got an unhealthy situation there. This new legislation is a fake safety bill. Charles Grassley has proposed 11 amendments to put some teeth into it. We don't know if any of those are going to be approved. They're trying to lower the pricing on drugs for Americans, which is good. But on the bad side here with this legislation, it creates something I call FDA Inc. It's turning a federal government agency into a corporation for the purpose of developing drugs and marketing them. And within that context, it is also increasing the probability of attacking dietary supplements using drug risk technology. And this is all being done through something called the Reagan-Udall Foundation for the FDA. You can go to my website, wellnessresources.com. You can read all about this. You can see the action letter we've proposed. This is going out all over the country right now. And within the last days, literally many thousands, we estimate it's at least 50,000 people have actually taken action on this. And we know that well over several hundred thousand people have been reached. So please join this. This is the voice of the people actually being heard. We are indeed making a difference, Dr. Stan.
And certainly I think you're doing a great job. I applaud you for what you're doing. And I think people have to realize that if we don't speak up, the other side will. I do not believe that the industry that's being regulated should ever have the right to write the legislation. I mean, you certainly, if you have the people who are going to be regulated writing the legislation, do you really think they're going to be interested in doing what's right for the people or doing what's right for Big Pharma? So I share your concern, and Sydney, I look forward to this being a successful effort, and we'll hope to have you on in the not-too-distant future to keep us abreast of this. Can you come back again in a week or two?
Absolutely. I'd love to tell everybody what happened and how it worked out, because once the Senate battle's over, it moves over to the House and then on to the President.
All right, fine. Well, God bless, and thanks for everything you're doing, Byron.
Take care, Dr.
Good Stan. Night. And we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, I think that Byron's done an excellent job, and I don't know why we haven't carried his book. I've read it through, and it was fascinating. It's Fight for Your Health, and it's available from Byron or even the regular bookstore, and certainly go to his website and find out more about it. We actually carry, of course, the book by Dr. Marcia Angel, who's a physician at Harvard University, formerly the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, which is the single most prestigious medical journal in the United States, and certainly it's called The Truth About the Drug Companies, and basically how your tax money is used to do the research for so much, many of the medications that then are licensed to the drug companies. They do some clinical studies on it. They market this at fantastic profits. I mean, $3, $4, $5 a pill for a product they didn't ever make. They didn't develop it. And then, of course, how they will have Me Too types of drugs. They'll change a molecule here and there, and then another pharmaceutical company will come up and market the same thing. They're all shadows of one another. It's a fantastic insight into an industry that is not competitive. I mean, I believe in competition. I believe in profits. But I do not believe in using the government to rape the public, and that's exactly what they're doing. The name of the book, The Truth About the Drug Companies. And then, of course, to know more about what you can do for your health, Dr. Russell Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. If you know somebody who has cancer and is facing chemotherapy and radiation, the book, A Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. And then, of course, Dr. Blaylock's classic book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. The Federal Drug Administration has licensed aspartame and MSG, which are carcinogens, which are known to produce brain tumors in animals, known to produce pathological obesity, and known, of course, to produce degenerative diseases of the central nervous system, known to produce epilepsy, known to produce fertility problems, and I'm just scratching the surface. And yet, of course, they refuse, of course, to allow this information to be known, and they're covering up the truth. That, of course, much of that is covered in Dr. Blaylock's wonderful book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. And, of course, it also destroys nerve cells. That's what the excitotoxin does. It stimulates your nerve cells to death. Well, there's so many books we have, of course, on the statin drugs, on GMO foods. If you'd like to get a health catalog, why, of course, we'd be glad to send it to you. But it lists all the books that we do carry on the health and health field. We think it's so important that you learn how to look after your health. So if you'd be interested in getting a free health catalog, we'd be glad to send you one. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We talked about population control. We talked about National Security Study Memorandum 200, and we've actually taken it. We actually bind it, put nice little binding on it, and you can get it off the Internet, but if you'd like to get it from Radio Liberty, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to read Dr. MacArthur's testimony before the House Appropriations Committee, and Dr. MacArthur worked for the Defense Department back in June of 1969 when he testified before the House Appropriations Committee and asked for $10 million to create a new disease that had never been known before, for which there is no medical treatment, a new means of mass killing. And if you'd like to see the testimony, we have it in its entirety. It is indeed frightening to realize there are people who think this way. If you haven't, of course, seen my talk on planned population reduction or population control, or our 4-tape set on population control, if you'd like to know more, give us a call. 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Because our health, our future, our families are under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, once again coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion and delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We certainly welcome your calls if we ask for them. But right now, please hold your calls because we have Ron Brown with us, certainly one of my favorite guests. And Ron supports Radio Liberty, and we certainly appreciate his support. And we're going to be talking about what's going on in our nation financially. Of course, those of you who listen regularly know we've been expressing concern for a long time about the hedge funds. Now, the hedge funds are funds that are put together by very, very smart people who be able to take, I think probably minimum deposits, $100,000, $200,000 from very wealthy people who are willing to gamble for the opportunity to make big returns on their money. And they will take these large sums of money, and they'll leverage them. They'll actually leverage them 10 times over. In other words, they'll purchase something and they'll borrow 10 times the value of what that is, with the idea that, of course, things turn against them. They have the money, sufficient funds to cover it, but hopefully it won't turn against them. And they're going to make fabulous profits. And many of these hedge funds are making 50%, 60% profit a year. Sometimes the heads of the hedge funds are making up to $1 billion profit. The head of the hedge fund is making $1 billion profit because he's made so much money for the members of that hedge fund. But the problem is, as long as things go well, why, of course, you're in good shape. And, of course, ordinarily what they'll do is they'll buy a derivative, which is like an insurance policy in case their bet turns against them. So you really can't lose at all. I mean, it's almost like too good to be true, you know, 50-60% profit, and you can't lose. The trouble is, of course, there's somewhere between $400 and $600 trillion out there in derivatives. There's not that much money in the world. And, of course, many of these hedge funds are taking some very, very risky positions. We had one back in 1998, long-term capital management. When it went down, lost $6 billion overnight, almost brought down the whole financial system. And we've got, you know, at that time where they're probably, you know, 20 or 30 or $40 billion in hedge funds. Now they're $1.4 trillion in hedge funds. And they're all sitting out there, each one gambling, that they're going to make money off the other hedge funds. One of these days, it's sort of like when you're playing musical chairs, and as long as the music's running, why, you can have a great time running around those chairs, but when the music stops, why, there are not enough chairs, and somebody's going to be left standing all by themselves and with tremendous losses. Well, this is one of the things that concerns me, the collapsing housing market, certainly the falling dollar. The dollar is falling. Where is the dollar now, Ron?
It's right at 81.8 on the dollar index.
Well, isn't that great? Because it means our goods are so much more competitive overseas. Isn't that a good thing?
That's what they tell us. That 80 support level goes back 30 years to 1977, I believe. And so if the dollar breaks below that, it's kind of look out below, because no one can even come up with where the next support level would be.
So, but of course, the thing is that, I mean, with the dollar falling, where gold and silver should be going up, and instead they're going down. Nothing makes sense. How could all these things be happening? Why is the market going up, gold and silver falling, the dollar falling? Ron, why don't you pick up the story there?
Well, you know, as we've discussed many times on the air, our whole monetary financial system is based on a mountain of debt. And as that debt structure gets larger and larger and larger, the consequence of any type of recession becomes so massive that they don't dare allow it. So you notice over the last 20, 30 years, anytime any major institution tries to fail, they step in to bail it out, whether it was Chrysler, 30 years ago, and long-term capital management, you name it, Mexico, Argentina, Brazil, Russia, Poland. So it's like a Ponzi scheme at this point. They must keep the system growing. And gold and silver, on the other hand, is the arch enemy of paper money. So the very people who are bailing out and propping up the paper system time after time after time, they're at the same time using equal energy to force down the price of gold and silver, because gold and silver acts like a barometer of confidence in the paper system. So if gold and silver were to start rising dramatically, then it would destroy confidence, and our whole system is based on nothing but confidence. So it's just it's a massive game of charades and brinksmanship that they're playing.
Well, of course, it's wonderful when you can actually create money out of nothing, simply print it, and then go all throughout the world buying up corporations, buying off politicians, buying up mines, and, of course, using this artificially created money to bring prosperity back into this country. The problem is, of course, that the value of the dollar continues falling, and as the United States has shifted from being the greatest lending nation in the world to the greatest borrowing nation in the world, and is having to borrow already up to $3.5 billion a day just to meet our daily needs, and we're having to borrow a couple of billion dollars of that from other countries. We're really not in the same position economically we were even 10 years ago, are we?
Not at all. In fact, I was reading something today talking about just the trade deficit with China alone. If you just go back to 1995, which is, what, 12 years ago, we were running a trade deficit with China of about $34 billion a year. Here we are, this year it's going to be $232 billion. So China uses those profits, and they, in the past, they have turned around and reinvested those profit dollars from their trade back in U.S. Treasury bonds to keep the system going. And as I've said many times in the past, there will be a day when China doesn't need us for trade anymore.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Archie Stan, and Ron is simply pointing out that you go back, you know, 1995, it's 12 years ago, and of course, our trade deficit with China was about $30-35 billion. Today it's over $200 billion, and certainly we've built up communist China, it is communist China. It's a ruthless, tyrannical dictatorship that allows no dissent at all on the part of the people. And of course, but we've built up their economy, and of course they have become, as of either this year or next year, the greatest exporting nation in the world. They've actually exporting more than the United States is, which is up until recently has been the primary exporting nation in the world. Not only that, but they're building up, of course, consumption at home. More and more people in China are buying more and more things, so they can produce now for their own economy and begin building up the living standards of their own people, and certainly the people in other underdeveloped countries, because they can produce so cheaply. And it's an amazing phenomenon. But Ron then asked the question, when will we reach the point where China no longer needs the United States to buy its products? And then what will happen? And what is it going to do with the $1.2 trillion that it has in foreign reserves? It's got to hold them, and I think about $70 billion of that is in U.S. dollars. And the value of that has fallen almost 35% in over the last 2 years because the dollar has fallen in its relationship to other currencies. Are they going to hang on till it loses another 30%? Or are they going to begin investing in the United States? Or are they going to begin dumping dollars? And if they do begin having massive investments in the United States, or they begin to dump dollars, then what is that going to mean as far as the value of our currency? Will this be a massive inflation? After all, we've been exporting our inflation to other countries for years. What happens if they begin exporting our inflation back to us? So you pick up the story, Ron.
Well, I read something on that same note. I was reading from an article, Gold Gone Wild, by John Ng. and you can get it on gold-eagle.com. But he's talking about today, China's middle class is bigger than the population of the United States of America. Now, that just blew my mind. Of course, you're talking over a billion people there, and the population of America is, what, 300 million? But they're saying that the middle class in China is now bigger than the population of the United States. So that would tell me they're building their infrastructure very, very quickly, because those middle class people are the ones that need a new car and a new refrigerator and a new TV and a new cell phone and all the things that America is up to the gills in. So I think we're getting close to the point. In fact, there's evidence to show that China and Japan are backing off of buying more and more of our debt, and that's what it requires, not just to keep the same amount of debt purchases. They have to keep increasing, not because our deficits keep getting bigger and bigger. And there's strong evidence now that they're backing off, and that creates an interesting question. If China and Japan and some of these other countries in the Middle East or whatever are not buying the necessary bonds to finance our deficits, if someone doesn't step up to the table to buy that paper, then the bond market itself would collapse. So you've got to ask the question, who is it that's stepping up to the plate to buy those bonds? If I had to make a guess, it's going to be our Federal Reserve, who's simply monetizing that debt, creating the illusion that there's a demand for that paper.
Oh, because when you speak of monetizing the debt, what you're really talking about is the Federal Reserve would simply print the money or print the bonds or the credit or whatever they would utilize, create this either credit or money out of nothing, which would be highly inflationary. And this, of course, would have a tremendous impact on our economy. The one thing that happens when you have a paper money, a fiat money system that is not tied to anything, the one thing the monetary experts fear is inflation. Because once inflation starts, it's sort of like, it's pretty hard to stop, as we see today, for instance, in Rhodesia, the Marxist regime that Henry Kissinger brought to power there. The inflation rate is about 1,800% a year. 1,800% a year. And, of course, could we ever have an inflation rate even, half of that here in the United States? People say it could never happen, but I would ask, why not? I mean, if we have massive debts and nobody else is buying them, where is the money going to come from? They're certainly not going to collapse our economy, suddenly cut off all money and plunge us into a recession, because everybody would be mad. Far better simply to inflate the debt away, and then you don't have to worry about it. You can destroy debt to inflation. Of course, you destroy the holdings of the people in the process. You destroy their pensions. You destroy their bonds, their CD, their annuities, anything that is attached to money. But then you can always, of course, blame that on the wicked Osama bin Laden or somebody else. You'd never want to blame that on the politicians and certainly on the members of the Federal Reserve Board, who've created a totally untenable position, a fiat money system with nothing behind that but the integrity of the members of the Federal Reserve Board, who really, many of them, of course, they're investing, like Bill Gates, like George Soros, like Warren Buffett. They're investing overseas. They know what's going to happen to the American dollar. Because they just don't want the American people to know. So what do you think is going to happen, Ron?
Well, what tells me we're getting close to the end times is end time of the financial system as we know it, the U.S. dollar system. Is everywhere you turn now, you start reading more and more about this new North American community and the common currency they want to create for both countries, or the three countries, called the Amero. And if you poll the American people tonight, I suspect if President Bush went on the air and said everyone has a yay or a nay button on your TV, if you want to go into this collusion with create one country between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, push yes, and if you don't want it, push no. I suspect if you took that vote tonight, 95% of the people would say not no, but heck no. So in order to achieve that, to impose such a draconian solution on the American people, they would first have to create a crisis. And that crisis I've been predicting and projecting is going to be the dollar crisis. And you can see it's at hand. Our nation is bankrupt by any criteria you want to consider. So as we go into this banking dollar crisis, as the world jettisons their dollars and rejects the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency, which would then take away our borrowing power to finance this massive debt, then we're going to head towards hyperinflation as the Fed has to print more and more and more, and that will create the crisis from which they can now impose their solution in a monetary reform.
And, of course, you have to have some sort of a stable currency or you have an unstable society. And so if they can create this crisis and, and then, of course, it would pretty well wipe out the savings of everybody, but still you have to have something to trade, then they can come up with a new solution called Amero, or call it what you will. That seems to be the accepted current, the idea now, but you're going to have a monetary crisis, and that monetary crisis is going to crush the hopes and aspirations of so many Americans out there who don't understand that there are people in positions of power who have a different agenda, who certainly worship a different God. Their goal is to create a new world order, a new world religion, a new world ruler. But before that it comes about, first of all, you have to create the economic, trade, and then monetary unions of Europe, North America, South America, Africa, Asia, and then, of course, the Arab countries. And that's exactly what's underway in every one of those areas. They're setting up trade blocks. Hugo Chavez is playing his part, and he is simply an actor like Ahmadinejad over in Iran. Hugo Chavez, I think they probably got him from Central Casting someplace, and of course he's organizing South America against the wicked Yankees in the North. And many of these countries are willing to give up their economic sovereignty and their national sovereignty to join the trade bloc to fight the wicked Yankees. Under the leadership, of course, of Hugo Chavez, which is such a scam because that's exactly what the Rockefellers and the people in the North, the globalists in the North, want. But people don't understand. So there has to be a crisis, and you can just see that crisis looming. Well, you know, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment for Ron, certainly he's been following this for a good long while, has some very, very sound ideas. Go ahead, Ron. What are your other thoughts?
Well, I always remember what David Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger were quoted as saying, the American people will not accept our new world order today, but given the right financial crisis, they will welcome us with open arms. So, I just see this whole system on the verge of coming down. Now, is that going to be 6 months or 6 years? I don't know when that'll be, but it's not that far out. We can see it right on the horizon. And so the individual, while we're unfortunately powerless to stop it at this point, all we can do is the best we can to protect ourselves from the onslaught and not become part of the problem. So it seems rather obvious to me, since the fiat system that is in place is the very thing that's being repudiated and destroyed, and that happens to be the traditional investments of Americans for five generations. The question is, how do you start thinking outside the box and learn to protect yourself from the inevitable, and that's the collapse of the dollar?
And I think this is the thing that nobody wants to talk about. Could it really happen? Well, let me tell you, it was Voltaire who said that all fiat money eventually returns to its inherent value, which is nothing. We'll be right back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ron Brown. If you're out there and you have a question or comment for Ron, you don't have to be bashful about asking him. Asking and giving us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We have so many things that are happening now. The housing market is beginning to implode. The number of people who are having to go into foreclosure is increasing. In fact, you're even beginning to see this on television now as they talk about people who are simply, I have got these crazy loans, these negative loans where you don't have to pay anything down, or no interest loans, or adjustable rate loans, and more people are actually having to give up their homes. They just can't afford them. You run into this in your area at all, Ron?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I was reading this morning, there's over 6,000 homes on the market right here in Colorado Springs, and that's up from like 4,000 just a year ago. So maybe 4,800, but it's up 30%, the number of houses on the market. So, and, you know, the housing bust is, you know, if you think back to the 90s when you had the dot-com bubble going, and Greenspan was bragging about the wealth effect of rising stocks, and then of course, when the dot-com bubble burst in 2000, all of a sudden that wealth effect turned to a negative impact because people were losing 70, 80, 90% of their investments in the NASDAQ, and so they had to come up with the next bubble, which was the real estate bubble, and then as real estate prices were soaring, they were bragging about the wealth effect of the real estate market, and people could go back and revalue refinance their houses every 2 or 3 years, pull out the extra equity as it grows and grows and grows, and go out and keep up with the Joneses and buy the new cars and all the toys that kept our economy going. So our whole economy now has been based on spending beyond your means for the last 10, 15, 20 years. And at some point, that bubble will pop, and I think we're starting to see the beginning of it now because the real estate market is much bigger than the dot-com market was. You know, I was reading today, I said 70% of the American families own their own home. So you have a massive amount of people that are going to be affected by this crisis in the real estate bubble.
Well, because for the people who own their home, they are in pretty good shape. It's the people who are buying their home with an adjustable rate mortgage or buying their home with one of these creative mortgages where all you do is just simply pay the interest, or maybe you don't even pay the interest, or maybe you don't pay anything at all. They just increase the amount you owe on your home every single month. They have all these sort of things, and then maybe 5 years from now, you got to start paying the interest, or maybe paying interest and principal, but it's going to be so high that people are just not going to be able to afford it. And what's happening is, as the people with adjustable rate mortgages suddenly have to begin paying the full rate on their mortgages, the payments will go from $1,000 a month to $2,500 a month, and they just don't have the money for it. And they face one or two possibilities, and the usual possibility is they're going to lose that home. It's going to go into foreclosure.
Well, the foreclosures are just expanding rapidly in a lot of places.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. So this is Dr. Stan, and since we begin to see the housing bubble coming down, but we see the stock market going up. It's the most phenomenal thing. We're hitting new highs on the stock market literally every day, or almost every day, or every other day, and we're up well over 13,000 on the Dow Jones. But, Ron, how is the rest of the stock market doing, and how is the market really doing? We know that the Dow Jones is going up, but what's happening to the other stocks? Are they doing pretty well?
Well, the gold and silver has been in a kind of a trading zone now for the last, a year. That's when the gold stocks got hit hard back in May a year ago. They had this massive run-up, and then all of a sudden the powers to be had to come in and try to get control of it, and I think they attacked it with a vengeance and drove the price down. But go back to what I was talking about, that the whole monetary system is this gigantic confidence game. And if you look at what the stock market was doing as the housing bubble was breaking, and then housing starts, a lot of the housing building companies were in trouble. All the auto companies are in trouble. So confidence in our system was starting to erode very seriously. And so I'm convinced that at that point, the powers to be, the monetary authorities, have no choice but to step in and start running the printing press, pump so much liquidity in the market that all boats rise. And then once you start the stock market rising, now you can start bragging about how wonderful things are and confidence is going to return. And that's basically what's happened. But it's all hot air, in my opinion. It's not based on any fundamental strength in the economy. It's based on just liquidity being pumped into the system. You know, at this point, we're kind of like a drug addict who maybe 10, 20 years ago, we were smoking a little grass, and maybe we were snorting a little cocaine. But now the economy is like a heroin addict. You got to give him a mainline dose every 2 hours to keep him from going cold turkey. And, of course, at some point, if you keep doing that, you're going to overdose the victim. That's what we're about to do with our economy. It's going to be overdosed. We're going to go into hyperinflation. Confidence will be destroyed in fiat money. There will be a panic out of paper assets. Bonds and municipal bonds and so forth like that will suffer tremendously, and everyone will be seeking the refuge of something tangible and real because that's the only thing they can trust.
Well, you know, I think it's really very interesting that they keep telling us that there's no inflation. Well, maybe just a little bit of inflation. But and then, of course, they say, you know, inflation adjusted by, with the exception of food and energy, you know, inflation is well under control. But now, wait a minute. I mean, here gasoline and food are two of the major things we buy. And then, and what about health care? You mean to tell me that health care is going up at 2% and drugs at the pharmacy are going up at 2%? And why do you take the food out after all? Because of your ethanol use of corn, why the price of corn is doubled, and then that the price of beef is going up, and the price of poultry is going up, and the price of eggs are going up, and the price of milk is going up, and the price of so many things is going up today. And then they tell us there's no inflation. And it's that old adage, are you going to believe what the government tells you, or are you going to believe your lying eyes? And I would think that any person with half an ounce of intelligence realizes that if you look overall as far as what the cost of things, the cost of many of the basic essentials of what we utilize every day, food, and of course gasoline, they're going up. And I noticed that I buy it from a mail order house. I buy shirts. They're going up in value. I got to buy two or three of them to get them down anywhere close to what they were about a year, year and a half ago. And little by little, everything is going up. Even many of the things we're importing from other countries, as the dollar falls, why the price of the imports is beginning to go up. And people have to understand that inflation is here. And when the government says that inflation is under control, that unemployment is under control, it's simply that figures don't lie, but liars figure, and they are hoping you will believe what they say. Repeat it often enough, doesn't matter how ridiculous it is, why, of course, it's still a lie. Prices are going up at the food store, and Chris would like to hear from you if you're out in the audience. Know what you think. Do you really believe that inflation's under control? Do you really believe, of course, that we're increasing wages enough to keep up with the increase of prices, both domestic and foreign? Give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, what's going to happen if some of these hedge funds go down? What's going to happen if Warren Buffett's right? The derivatives truly are a financial weapons of mass destruction, currently latent but potentially lethal. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ron Brown. We're simply talking about what's happening economically, as certainly even within the financial pages of the Wall Street Journal and other publications I read, they're beginning to talk about at least the potential danger of some hedge funds collapsing. And if one were to collapse, it could be a catastrophe. But what would happen if four or five or six multi-billion dollar hedge funds were suddenly to run into a problem at one time when long-term capital management got into trouble back in 1997? Why, of course, they were scrambling to keep the whole system afloat. Would they be able to keep it afloat without massive infusion of money, inflation? You know, if a dozen of our hedge funds went down, and remember, they have assets of well over $1.4 trillion today, and that's very highly leveraged. Well, why did you pick up a story there, Ron?
Well, you know, I was reading before we came on there that the number of hedge funds is somewhere around 9 to 10,000, and they're all trading on high leverage, as you pointed out earlier. It's all required to keep more liquidity pumping into the system, and it's just at some point, you know, was it Everett Dirksen said $1 billion here and $1 billion there, and soon you're talking real money. Now we're talking $1 trillion here and $1 trillion there, and we're already talking real money because this thing has just become such a massive bubble, and they're just kind of caught in the rat race. All they can do is play the game as long as they can, knowing at some point the game will end, and I think we're getting very, very close to it. You start trying to juggle trillions of dollars, you know. It's, in fact, when I read that the true national deficit for 2006, this came from David Walker at the Comptroller of the Currency, that the true national the deficit for 2006 was $3.7 trillion. That is mind-boggling. You know, in 1980, when we had the first blow-off and gold went to $870 and silver went to $52 and debt was totally out of control, our national debt had not even reached $1 trillion. Now we're doing 2-3 times that in one year. So obviously the stakes are getting higher and higher and higher, and at some point you run out of rabbits to keep the game going.
Well, I think everybody should actually go up to Google and type in David Walker. David Walker, he is the CEO of the General Accounting Administration, and he will tell you the United States is, frankly, bankrupt. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I was just saying that every one of our listeners should write down the name David Walker. David Walker. Go up and Google in the name. He is actually the CEO of the General Accounting Administration. He is not a political appointee. He's there, I think, for 12 years. And basically, he has simply pointed out that if you take and, of course, use proper accounting techniques for what the national debt actually is, because it's not simply cash in and cash out. What commitments have we made to pay pensions and health care for our citizens and now drug care for our citizens over the next 50 years? And if you look this, you certainly sit before you. You have these commitments, you should have money invested so that you will be able to recoup, say, at 6%, enough to make the payments out. And he said that if you look at what we're committed to pay out in federal pensions and in veterans pensions, and in Social Security and Medicare, and now the coup de grace to our financial system was Ted Kennedy's drug bill, which, of course, was what George Bush got pushed through early in the first administration. That was Ted Kennedy's bill. Ted never could get it through. So George Bush got it through for his good friend Ted Kennedy. Supposedly the enemy, but never the enemy at all. It's all showbiz. Anyway, that the national debt was not, you know, $8.8 trillion, as we're told, but over $50 trillion, and there's no way that can be paid off, and so we'd either have to, even if you took everything that everybody made every year, you know, and, you know, just in the way of paying off what is owned, why, we still wouldn't have enough money to do it. So, and people aren't going to work if you take everything they make, for sure. So, basically, we're in real trouble. And Dr. or Professor Kotlikoff, who I had written a report for the St. Louis Federal Reserve Branch, has come up with similar conclusions. I believe that's Kotlikoff, isn't it, Ron? You know the
that
article?
That sounds right, but okay. I'm not sure on that.
All right, fine. Well, find out if what we're saying is true. Understand that there is no way we can possibly pay off our debts, and so the only way out of this mess, of course, is simply to destroy the debt. You do that with inflation. What a wonderful scam to cheat the common people. But that's, of course, what you're doing. Believe me, Warren Buffett's protected. George Soros is protected. Cindy, Bill Gates is protected. They understand what's going on. The Rockefellers are not going to get hurt by this, but so many of the little people will. And so our plea is, listen, get the information. Certainly we have a great talk. It's available on DVD and VHS, and with the syllabus, called The Financial Tsunami. Understand what lies ahead and begin to protect yourself. And remember, I am not a financial consultant. I'm an amateur historian. I've just been watching what's going on for 45 years, and believe me, I've made a lot of mistakes. But I hope I've learned enough to know that I'm not smart enough to anticipate what they're going to do. But it's pretty obvious that they have reached a point where there's nothing they can do to save it, and the only way to deal with it is to destroy the system and then start over again, which they've done in time and time again throughout the centuries in other countries, and there's no reason to find that to believe it won't happen here. Well, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Cindy, Ron, you talk a lot about silver as an investment. Now, we hear that the people down in Mexico, there in the Mexican legislature, want to begin to monetize silver again. At one time, why, of course, silver was monetized there in Mexico. They've got large supplies of silver, and they want something behind their currency to give it stability. They don't believe, as our people do, that it's as sound as the dollar, because they know the dollar isn't very sound. What's happening to silver? What's happening to other countries and people buying silver as a means of storage of wealth?
Well, Salinas down in Mexico is the one that's trying to push it through. But if you tie it into the bigger picture and look what they're pushing for with the North American community, where they're going to merge Mexico with Canada and the U.S., then I suspect they'll never have the political might to force that, to monetize silver again, which is something the world really needs, to go back to some, honest monetary system. But I have my doubts it'll ever get pushed through. But it is interesting that it's drawing attention to the fallacy of fiat money, and more people are starting to wake up. Well, even if they never push that bill through, it's going to draw more attention to the fact that people need to do something to protect themselves from the folly of this fiat money system. You know, what we're going through right now is kind of interesting, because with the stock market's been up, 19 or 20 out of the last 21 days? I don't keep track of that exactly, but we've blasted through 13,000, and we're 13,000 and change, and they're talking about new highs in the stock market. Yet if you go back to 2001, when the stock market first peaked, 11,700, somewhere in that ballpark, in 7 years, you've only gone up 10, 12, 15%, right? If you compare it to what gold and silver have done, which is the real money, that's the real international money, gold has gone from 250 to approaching $700, so it's up over 300 or close to 300%, and silver's up 350% from its low of about $4. So in real terms, the stock market is not going anywhere. It just seems like it, because it may be going up a little bit in nominal terms, but in terms of purchasing power, the Dow buys less today than it would 5 years ago. So it's what I call the phantom crash. People are sitting there counting their nominal dollars and their net worth, but in real terms, it's taken more and more to keep up with the Joneses, or to keep up with the status quo. So people are basically falling behind, other than the speculators, and of course they've been getting rich on leverage in the real estate market and so forth, but that bubble's going to pop too, and we see it happening as we speak.
Well, I think it's fascinating. I like to follow certain things like nickel, and I can remember nickel was down about $3 a pound. You know, and we're talking maybe, 10 years ago. It's up to $22 a pound now. $22, you know, nickel's just gone through the roof. You don't hear much about that, but a nickel is really a very important metal in so many of the things, stainless steel and other things. Certainly the price of copper's gone up, but, you know, nowhere near, of course, so many of the other things, although right now we see the commodities going. We see the price of wheat going up dramatically, almost double. We see the price of corn going up, and these things are all going to be reflected in food prices very, very soon, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, I'm sitting here bragging about how silver and gold have done in terms of relative to the stock market, but silver and gold have done poorly compared to the other base metals. For example, I've got a recap here. Oil is up from $10 to $63. That's 600% or sixfold. Zinc has gone from 35 cents a pound to $2 a pound. That's fivefold. Copper from 75 cents a pound to $4 a pound at the high. That's, fivefold. Lead has gone from 20 cents to 90 cents, fivefold. Nickel from $3 to 22, like indium, molybdenum, selenium, cobalt are all up over 1,000%, or tenfold. Uranium's up 13-fold. So the base metals have led the charge. Gold and silver haven't kept up, and if you ask me why that's the case, it's simply because the monetary powers are manipulating the price so it doesn't rise to draw attention to the inflation and destruction of the fiat system.
Well, of course, you know, I know you are always very interested in silver, and I was just reading an article on it saying that we're, you know, at one time there, I think there were 12 billion ounces of silver out there, and today it seems to be down around about 300 million ounces of silver, but we've been hearing that for years, that, you know, that we're going to be running out of silver one of these days, and the price is going to have to go up. Or if people in other countries started buying the silver, why, the price would go up, or if anybody really tried to corner the market, the price would go up. But, you know, this just does never seem to happen.
Well, that's true but not true. The fact is that silver is up about 300% in the last five years. But it's interesting, when you really start studying the silver market, you say, how in the world have they kept it down for so long? I mean, we've been running deficits for 15 straight years, where the world literally consumes more silver than it mines. So every year there's less and less silver. And as you pointed out in that article, I was reading it just before we went on there. In fact, the name of that article is Why the Silver Price is Set to Soar. And I think you can get it on 321 Gold, or actually it came out of MoneyWeek.com. So, and those of you who are on the Internet, I would say look this up, because it's a wonderful, wonderful article on silver. And but we've gone from 12 billion ounces down to, they say, 300 million ounces. Well, even if it's a billion ounces, think about it, Dr. Stan, a billion ounces of silver, let's say it even $15, that's only $15 billion to buy all the silver that could be in the world. Now, first off, that silver's already spoken for. In order to buy it, you're going to have to talk someone into selling it to you. So it's going to take a higher and higher price just to get any of that silver coming back into the market. I was reading about the new wealth that's being created, and one billionaire in Mexico increased his net worth from $20 billion to $50 billion. So he increased in 1 year his net worth of $30 billion. That's one individual who could go out and buy two times the value of all the silver in the world. So when you look at all the bogus fiat money that's being created to keep the system propped up, and yet gold and silver is ultimately the only real money, the refuge that the world goes to when these fiat systems collapse, you know, try to picture trillions of dollars trying to get into $15 billion or a billion ounces worth of silver. It's mind-boggling to think where the price could go.
Well, do you want to get your telephone number out, your website, so people that know how to get in touch with you? You do have a website?
I know, but if I put out some information, as you know, I put out a newsletter from time to time. But if anyone would like to chat with me or get a package of information on silver, and the economy and what's going on. My number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. Well, my telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you've got a question for Rob, or is it a comment? But it's been fascinating over this last few years to watch it. Of course, all the things we've been talking about are really coming to pass. We see that the housing market began to implode. We see the hedge market, of course, already overstretched and has the potential to create all sorts of problems. We see the people, you know, writing the newsletters beginning to talk about the potential danger of the derivative market. We see the price of oil going up and realizing as the price of oil goes up, people will have less to actually spend for other items. We see the price of food and other items going up. The government keeps saying there is no inflation. We see, of course, more and more of our jobs being sent overseas as part of this program of globalism. And step by step, we see the progressive erosion of the foundation of the American economic system. Now, this doesn't affect most people. Most people have a job. And right now, while there certainly are jobs, at least if you are highly skilled, but a lot of the people in certain parts of the country who are, say, in manufacturing, who do not have a skill, maybe they've been working in automotives for a long time, and now those automotive companies are moving offshore, or maybe they're working in the textile industry, or in the furniture manufacturing industry. And even certainly in many positions in our electronic industry, they're beginning to move in people from other countries who will work with the same degree of ability as American workers, but for ever so much less in the way of money. We find certainly as far as the production of homes, the building of homes, even many of the Mexicans who are up here working within the housing industry, they're going back to Mexico because these jobs are no longer here. And, of course, as the jobs are no longer here, people are not going to be spending the money. It's interesting to know that up until just this last month or so, sales retail outlets were rising at a fairly substantial clip, but they're beginning to fall off a little bit. In other words, people are not buying as much as they used to. If you think that we're going to begin to see contraction of in the sales here in this country, because that could certainly precede the beginning of a real recession here. This is what happened back in 1929.
I was reading, if I read so much, I don't remember where I got this, but they were talking about 70% of the spending in America came from the rise in real estate values and the real estate bubble. So by definition, if you pop that bubble, then the source of most of the income to keep this consumption game going is going to dry up very, very quickly. And you know what's frightening about bubbles is that it takes years for them to develop. You know, look at the dot-com bubble when it was developing. It was going through the 80s and the 90s. And then all of a sudden, when it collapsed, it was just overnight. The NASDAQ dropped, 60-70% in a matter of 2 or 3 months? And the same thing is starting to happen in the real estate bubble, because when people are making money on this leverage, they get so euphoric with their gains, and they're so arrogant, and because they obviously are brilliant or they wouldn't be making such wonderful money. And so what they do is they keep playing close to the edge. When the game is over, all of a sudden, like you say, the musical chairs, there's not enough chairs. In fact, I've got a client right now. He was, I won't even mention the city, but it was in Florida. And for the last 10, 12, 15 years, he's been making a fortune building these high-rise condominiums on the beach. And, selling these things for over $1 million a piece, because everyone's got more money than sense right now. and I was talking to him last month, and he's stuck with eight of them now. That a year ago they were worth $1.2 million apiece, and now he's got them on the market for $700 million, and no one even
looked at them. $700,000.
Yeah, $700,000. That way, yeah. And all of a sudden, he told me yesterday that he's had to go out and borrow $5 million. So here's a guy that was in tall cotton here. Just everything was wonderful. And when the market turns against you, that leverage can eat you alive so fast. A lot of people are going to be shocked at how fast they lose their riches.
We'll be back in just a moment. Well, I think, you know, Ron, it's that old adage, the market is determined by greed and fear. Greed and fear is what drives us, I'm afraid, and nothing has changed. And so you pick up the story. We've got 3 minutes before we have to let you go.
Well, all of us in this industry are trying so hard to get people to wake up. Because really, it's not just about making money in this thing. It's about trying to save a society, a government of law that's given us the freedom that America's had. There's never been a country like it in the history of the U.S. And yet we've grown so soft and with our riches, and it's just come so easy that people have forgotten that freedom can go, and that's what we're about to lose. You know, I have a little problem with a lot of the economists and coin dealers talking about how to get rich and the collapse of America, you know, and how to short the market and get. But if we lose our society, then all that money is going to do you absolutely no good. So I think there's a responsibility that comes from being in this industry to try to teach and try to wake people up to what's happening to their country. So there's if nothing else, they can at least save their soul and prepare themselves spiritually for where we're heading. Because America's heading for a major, major change in the way things are, and not many of us are ready for it.
Well, of course, I look upon what's happening today as really a spiritual battle. I believe there's spiritual forces behind everything that's going on. And I think that a lot of us think that we're going to be able to play the system. We're really so smart. And that's, of course, when you're in the greed part. But wait till the fear sets in. I think that, of course, we'd be foolish not to try to protect ourselves, not to make all the necessary arrangements that we possibly can. But in the final analysis, I think we're going to have to depend upon the Lord. I really do. What we hope, of course, is that some of the people who listen to our programs will begin to protect themselves financially and physically, but, of course, spiritually as well. Because as we've said so many times before, and we will say again, we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, educational, and economic battlefield. And this is a very real battlefield. Of course, people just love to think they're going to be able to get rich easily, and this is not the way the game is played. Good night, Ron. God bless. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you've enjoyed our conversation with Ron Brown, and I think the things we've been talking about for so long are coming to fruition. If you'd like, of course, to learn more about what's going on, I have a talk we've given. It's called Financial Tsunami. It's available on DVD. It's available on VHS. And it comes with a syllabus that gives you, of course, the government statistics and tells you exactly what is really happening. And it will explain to you the various terms of what's going on. And we'll give you an understanding. Now, remember, I'm not a financial consultant, but I will tell you what I think people need to do to protect themselves in times like this. And if you'd, of course, like to learn more about the talk on the financial tsunami, why, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. I've written a pamphlet called The History of Money. Now, you can go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and pull down the newsletters, because my pamphlet is based upon four or five of the newsletters we've written to try to learn ourselves and then, of course, put this into a written form to help you. Certainly we have the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. We have the book entitled The Federal Reserve Conspiracy. And lastly, the book, The Fiat Money Inflation in France, the story of what happened in France back in 1789. After they destroyed the existing society in France, and they decided they had a wonderful means of creating prosperity. They were going to print money and utilize the land that they'd taken from the Catholic Church as the security for the money that they were going to be printing. And the system worked beautifully. I mean, they printed the money, people accepted the money because it was backed by land, and there was a tremendous prosperity along with that. Of course, came the beginning of the breakdown of moral standards, the marriage of the family, because, of course, they destroyed a religious belief as well. But the prosperity only lasted for a moderate period of time, because then things began to level out, and people, of course, were not, you know, they were not making as much money as they had. So to stimulate the economy again, they had to print more money, and then more money, and then more money, and then more money, until the printing presses were running full time. And then one day the whole system collapsed. They brought in a new ruler. His name was Napoleon Bonaparte, who put them back onto a gold monetary system, because, of course, Napoleon Bonaparte was smart enough to realize that you need some value for money. Else, of course, the politicians would destroy it. And so it's a story as old as time. That's Fiat Money Inflation in France. It's a short little book. It was written 100 years ago, but it's as true today as the time when it was written by, I believe, Andrew Dickinson White, who was the chancellor or the president of Cornell University. So if you'd like to know more about the books, they will give you some insight, and specifically might talk on financial tsunami. Well, you're certainly welcome to call our staff at 1-800-544-8927. And the talk, in fact, I was just watching it today, and as we put it onto a DVD, the talk, Financial Tsunami, on DVD or on video. And certainly we hope that many of you will be want to get the information. You have our permission to copy it, to get it to others, to warn them. And this is one thing you can do for people, is warn people what lies ahead. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Radioliberty.com. We do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to going to our website and, of course, to telling others about our programs. Remember, you can listen to our programs on the Internet 5 hours a day. You can hear them at Global Star. That's Global Star, www.globalstar, and then go to Channel 4. There you can listen 9 hours a day. Pray for America. Please pray for Radio Liberty.